us right now is Dee Wallace. You know her and love her as the mom on E.T. Yes, sirree, but she's done so much more than that. 4 television series, 400 commercials, tons of movies, and a brand new book, which is very entertaining. Let me show it to you. It's called Bright Light, and she is in the bright light and has been most of her life. So for all you folks who are living in darkness, listen up. Welcome, Dee.
Oh, I like that intro. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm great this morning.
Well, you're always good.
I pretty much am. Isn't it disgusting or fabulous, depending on the perspective?
I think it's more fabulous myself.
Me too.
Yeah.
I didn't always live my life in this much joy, though, and that's why I wrote the book.
I think it's a really cool book, actually. You know, instead of the usual biographies, autobiographies, this one's got a little bit more tinge to it. It's got more substance to it.
Well, I think the whole intention of writing the book was entirely different than just taking people through the amazing romp of my career. And, you know, you get a lot out of the book just on that merit also. But the intention was really to let people know that no matter how hurt they've been, how down they are, how much they've been abused or used, the light that they came in as that is truly authentically who they are is still intact, and it's up to us to just shine that old sucker.
Mm. Well, people have gone through so many things in this world, and we read about them.
I can't hear you, Mark.
I said people have gone through so much in this world where we read about them, whether it's going through a tornado or a hurricane or an earthquake or going mm-hmm. through abuse or rape or all these different things that just bring such darkness to life. And it's sometimes it's a good thing when people kind of can go through that and see the light at the end of the dark tunnel.
Well, yeah, and remember that they are the light. I think that's the biggest lesson that I got was I kept using people and blaming people and things that had happened to me to allow me to stay smaller and diminished and less joyful. And that in reality, I was the only one that had to use me, you know, and define me aside from what had happened or what had happened to me. And once I got that concept and took back my power through my responsibility, you know, of going, wait a minute, I get to create me here. Then my whole world started to change, and I was pretty far down. So I wanted to write this book in an entertaining, fun way, but with the message that, you know, if I was that far down and I am living pretty much in joy and peace and harmony now, you can too. Mm-hmm. Anybody can, but it's a choice we have to make.
Right. Now, there's some very interesting stuff about your career in here, especially about the beginnings of it, because I think that there's lessons to be learned for people who read it. One of the things is that particularly the way you went to train with Uta,
mm-hmm.
You went to New York, and then you went to L.A., and there's ways of being trained to do things, and there's also doing things on your own the way you feel more comfortable with while learning. You learned the dichotomy there and which one worked best for you. And it seems like people need to kind of follow that that lead and
well,
do what, you know.
Yeah, because you're the highest truth you have. And we're always taught that somebody else knows more than we and better than we. And so one of the first things we learn to do is turn off our voice. And our voice is the voice. Whatever you think the voice is comes through your voice. And so, you know, I was just this blithe little naive girl from Kansas. And that worked really well for me because I just naively expected the world to show up for me, even after a pretty much semi-tragic childhood. You know, my dad was an alcoholic all my life and ultimately ended up committing suicide. This was all, I had never been out of Kansas in my life. I taught a year of high school, and I thought, man, if not now, when? So I went, but I still had that original light of Deanna Bowers, you know, that was working for me, that I just trusted. And things, because of that, pretty much fell into my lap. By the time, between the time I left Kansas and the time I did ET was a little under 5 years, which is absolutely unheard of in my business. It's meteoric, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I attribute a lot of that to this, what we can call naivete, but in other words, we can call it total trust, too. And yeah, that worked really well for me. And I got to Uta's class, and I want to preface this by saying I have the utmost respect for Uta Hagen and her craft. But her technique was not right for me. It's a very intelligent head approach to acting where you break everything down. I mean, everything. Everything is a beat, and then you even break the beats down, really. Mm-hmm. And that just didn't work for me. My creative life doesn't work that way. My creative life works when I open the channel and trust and allow the information, or in acting, the character, to come through me so that I'm just in the moment. And it took me, you know, a couple of years to get back to that, not till I found Charles Conrad, who said, I'm going to give you permission not to think about anything. I don't want you to study it. I don't want you to read it. I don't want you to break it down. Well, I was free. I was free. And I think in life, if we can just open our channel that we are and allow that intuitive voice to be heard and then direct our brain to help us create that, then you've got the whole picture going for you.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk a little bit about the beginning of your career, because I think it's really interesting. You got a role on the Lou Grant show, and then you ended up in the movie 10. What was that like? Because Bo Derek was a huge sensation back then, and Dudley Moore in the 10 movie. What was it like working with the both of them?
You know, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful experience. John, not so much. John Derek, her husband.
Uh-huh.
But I remember the first day on the set, I got to the set, and Bo came over to say hello, and is everything okay? And again, my naivety, and I tell this story, it's so funny in the book. I go, well, Mr. Edwards, everything is great, but where's my trailer? And unbeknownst to me, my agents hadn't even negotiated me a dressing room. And he did not miss a beat. He looked at his producer, Tony Adams, and said, where's her trailer? Mm-hmm. And he kind of blinked and went, you know, Mr. Edwards, it's late, but it's on its way.
Yeah.
So Bo was standing there, and Blake turned to her and said, Dee's going to come in with you till her trailer gets here. And she said, absolutely, come on, you know. She was sweet, open, unassuming, loving, and Dudley, rest his soul, is one of my favorite people in the world. Dudley and I danced on many tabletops. We and the crew would go out, and it was just kind of a family thing. There was no star thing going on there. He was just available to everybody, beautiful to work with. You know, I just closed my eyes and tried to keep up with him.
Mm.
So it was just a beautiful experience, and you know, you start at the top, huh?
Yeah. Well, you went from there to, I think the next film after that was The Howling, where you played Karen White.
Yes.
Yeah. That was an interesting film too, and then of course E.T. How did life change after E.T. the Extraterrestrial came out, because that was just a huge, monstrous film. That was a Spielberg film, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How did life change for you as an actress at that point?
Well, you know, I don't think my life changed that much. My notoriety in the business certainly shot up, and I did a lot more press. And actually, I think the experience of the greatness and the bigness that E.T. was actually was one of the catalysts that made me pull all the way back in fear. And you kind of have to read the book to understand how this all played out. But a lot of those messages that I received as a child that had kind of haunted me, you know, all my life, went into play, you know. Don't be too big. You need to stay humble. Don't make too much money. Be one of the little people, you know, there's more blessing in being one of the little people than there are. And I think that's a message that a lot of us, an erroneous message that a lot of us get. That, you know, Mother Teresa and Gandhi did not stay small at all in any way, but they used their grace of power to change the world. And I think people who, those of us who, you know, want to see a world living in love and existing in love and harmony and peace, we have to come forward and start knowing the power that we are. Because if we don't, then the energies that aren't so keen on love and peace and harmony are happy to exercise their power. So I think we kind of have to turn that around for ourselves and know that if our true intention is coming from love and for the good of all, then power can only be a good thing.
You talked about Charles Conrad, your coach, who kind of led you down the right path and had you following your light. I understand that you opened your own acting studios in the 90s yourself, kind of doing the same thing for others.
I did. I had one of the largest studios out here for years, and that's when all the healing work started. Well, the healing work started, as you know, when I hit the floor one night. I mean, I had gone through my childhood with my father, had the suicide, been hurt by a lot of people in the business and in life, and then lost my husband to a heart attack. And I just had been angry for a really, really long time. And anger, any actor will tell you, is a secondary emotion underneath its grief or fear. And I had lived there for several years. And I just hit the floor one night and said, I don't want to be this way anymore. I don't want to be angry anymore. I don't want to be a victim anymore. I want my light back, and I want a way that we can heal E.T., the fallout, you know, my disappointment from E.T., and I want to know how we can heal ourselves. And I swear to you, if I thought I would be a healer in this lifetime, I would tell you you're nuts. But all this information came in because I asked, and I had an acting studio going at the time. And so I had about 80 people. I kind of look at it as the universe said, okay, well, we'll create your own little lab for you, Dee, so you can test this stuff out. And that's what we did. I had 80 kids. Kids, I call them kids. Some of them were, of course, as old as I was, but totally willing to trust and explore this work. And so we kind of, that's why I dedicated my first book, Conscious Creation, to my students who helped me, you know, create all this. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I look back on those years, and I think that was my Camelot, with all of those amazing souls that were so in trust, and we were opening up all the doors to this new information in ways that we never looked at the world. We were never taught to look at the world. You know, like loving yourself first. What? I mean, you know, in my family, in my Methodist family growing up in Kansas City, that was almost a cardinal sin. And it's the cornerstone of everything I know right now, that if you truly want to create your life the way you want it to be, you've got to love yourself enough to do that for yourself. Love yourself enough in, of course, the highest way, not an egotistical way, but putting yourself first and honoring yourself and sharing yourself and knowing the magnificence of who we are. And we're just never taught to do that. We're taught to do the opposite. So the studio was a huge, big family that created milestones of work within this healing that I do.
Now, there are many ways that people can heal. They pray, they chant, they visualize. But one of the things that you make a point of is that everything is energy.
Yes.
Tell us that.
Well, everything is energy. I mean, that's a scientific fact. That's not a woo-woo fact. And we also know that energy just is. Energy has to be directed for it to become manifested into physical form. Everything begins as light and is lowered into physical manifestation by the thought process. So that's why prayer can work and prayer can't work scientifically, because if you're praying from the point of view of the victim who has no control, who has no clear and concise idea of what they're praying for, that they don't believe they're worthy to receive it, and therefore they're going, well, whatever it is, okay, I'll succumb to that, then you're probably not going to get very definitive answers to your prayer. I mean, God helps him who helps himself. And so God, or the energy, no matter what words you want to put on it, the creative force, Atman, Buddha, whatever that is, that creative force that we are in partnership with, that creates our life for us, must be directed by us. We must be clear about what it is we are asking for, and asking in the original Hebrew means claim or demand. So we're not going, oh, please. We're going, this is my claim. I'm staking it. This is what I want. Deliver this to me. And I say in conscious creation, you know, the year I was into affirmations and I was on my treadmill every day. I'm a happy, successful working actress. I'm a happy, successful working actress. And the only thing that changed was my butt, because the what Neil Donald Walsh calls the sponsoring thought behind that was, I'm not a happy, working, successful actress. I'm going to do this to try to make that a truth. And that doesn't work. And that's why affirmations often don't work. You have to move into the feeling, the experience, the claim, the knowingness that you are before the world can deliver it to you. And we're looking at it, as my mom used to say, bass backwards. We're going, okay, well, when it happens, I'll know that I can do it. When it happens, I'll know it's real. And it's the knowing and the creation of you within yourself that creates your outside world. So you got to start within first. And, you know, there's principles that we all know. Forgiveness. If you don't forgive people, they own you. Basically, they own your energy. And a lot of your energy keeps focused on the anger of what they did to you, which equals what's not happening. So science will tell you whatever you focus on becomes a reality. If you take your focus away from it, we don't even know if it exists, because we're not feeding it any energy. You know, it's like the Little Shop of Horrors. Feed me, you know, the big plant. Well, if nobody had fed the sucker, it would have just died and not eaten anybody. But we keep feeding the negativity in our lives. We keep worrying about the money instead of looking at how we can be in harmony with money. We keep being in fear of relationships hurting us again instead of how can I release that and be in harmony with knowing that there is a divine, beautiful, harmonious, honoring relationship out there. I have to know that and feel it and experience it within myself, and then I attract it to me.
Tell us a little bit about O-Books. It seems to me like they're putting some really important works out there.
Well, they're a whole new idea in book publishing, actually. They're out of England. They're pretty much internet publishers. And they do everything. I mean, I hardly ever talk to anybody at O-Books. They do everything over email, the editing and everything, and the promotion. So it's a print on demand so that you don't have all the waste of the books that you have in traditional publishing. And it's been an interesting journey with them, because being an actress, you know, I really love to have that tactile one-on-one interaction with people. So it was a lesson in trust for me that they were there, they were doing it, they were, you know, on top of everything. And so we've gotten to be great email buddies.
You know, it's interesting that one of the emails that we got when we put out the Twitter that we were going to interview you is someone who's like a huge fan of horror films. And I didn't think of, why would they say that? But then I didn't realize you did so many horror films. The Hills Have Eyes, The Howling, The Frighteners, Cujo, even Stepford Wives was kind of a horror film. It's really interesting that you actually had that genre as well and did well.
Yeah, I seem to have attracted that. And I have a lot of people go, how can you be a healer and justify all these horror films? And my only answer I can give you, Mark, is I've been studying fear for 40 years. And quite truthfully, if it is a metaphor for life, aren't we all? That's the one biggest thing that we want to be free of. That is freedom, is no fear. Mm. And really, you know, all we have to fear is fear itself. And that's true. I think that's one of the most important statements ever made, that we are in choice every moment of our lives to choose fear or love, peace and harmony or fear and challenge, I guess.
We're talking with Dee Wallace, and the book is called The Bright Light. And if you need any more information on Dee, you can actually go to officialdeewallace.com. That's your website, right?
Actually, we just changed it. So thank you for asking. It's iamdeewallace.com. And literally, it was just changed. So I apologize for that, Mark. But they can find out about both my free call-in radio shows there, all my books there, all my work there. There's a lot of acting stuff on the site that they can visit also. And all of me is on iamdeewallace.com, yeah.
Do you ever get to Boston at all?
Actually, I'm coming back very close to Boston soon, in a couple of weeks. I'm going to be speaking and doing private sessions on tour with Dolores Cannon. And that's also up on my website. I'd love for anybody to come join us. She is an amazing healer and past life regressionist. And she found my work and called me and said, I want to introduce you to my world. I want them to know who you are. So I said, oh, gee, okay, and I'm going to be in three or four cities with her over the summer.
Well, Dee Wallace has been with us, and life has kind of gone in a circle for you. It's the way I look at it. You've always kind of been a teacher, whether it was in...
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, and now you're back to teaching again. What would you say to young Deanna Bowers now if you had run into her?
I would... Oh, what a great question, Mark. Wow, my heart center just opened up. I would say, wow, Deanna, you never knew how magnificent you really were.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's an interesting thing, and it's a wonderful book. And Dee, thank you so much for coming on, and I look forward to speaking to you again sometime.
Thank you so much for a great interview.
Take care. Bye. Bye-bye.